You know, we gotta win that fight today. We gotta get in with those socials. Let's do it for Johnny, man. We'll do it for Johnny.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pod of thunder and rock and roll. And let's get it started the way we always get it started on a Friday, with the Duff McKagan joke of the week.
Hi, Chris Jericho. It's Duff McKagan calling you. You know what kind of a bagel flies, Chris Jericho? That'd be a plain bagel. Thank you very much.
Ah, stinker as always. A plain bagel. Get it? Thanks as always to my bro, Rock and Roll Hall of Famer, Duff McKagan, for taking the time to entertain us with his bad, ridiculous jokes every single Friday. That was actually funny. I mean, I can't call it bad, but how crazy is it that a Rock and Roll Hall of Famer from Guns N' Roses takes time out of his busy schedule to call my stupid ass every week to leave all these jokes for you? So today, thanks to Duff, and thanks to all of you, because we're going to change things up today. We're talking movies, but not just any movie. One of my all-time favorite movies, The Outsiders. It is the 35th anniversary of this movie that I saw when I was 12 years old. This movie launched the careers of Rob Lowe, Patrick Swayze, C. Thomas Howell, Ralph Macchio, Matt Dillon, Emilio Estevez, Diane Lane, Tom Cruise. How's that for an A-list cast? Before they were A-listers, we're celebrating the movie's anniversary with Danny Boy O'Connor from House of Pain. Jump, jump, you know. And that's because not only does he love this movie more than I do, he bought the house in Tulsa, Oklahoma that was the home in the movie to Ponyboy, Soda Pop, and Derry in the movie. Like I said, it's the actual house where The Outsiders was filmed. That's where I met Danny Boy. I went to see the house when we were in Tulsa a while ago, and Danny Boy was there, and we actually had a conversation, decided we need to do a podcast about The Outsiders. He's got a lot of the original props used in the movies. He's restored the house to look like it did when everything was shot. He's got a lot of support from the cast and from the author, S.E. Hinton, who wrote the book, The Outsiders. You'll hear the story about how he found the house, ended up buying it, what it was like to renovate the entire thing. Danny's also talking about his search to find the original props used in various scenes, what he has found, what he's still looking for. He's doing an Outsiders convention every year. Plus, we talk about how the movie affected our lives. I remember taking the bus to downtown Winnipeg in 1983 to see The Outsiders. I wanted to be Two-Bit so bad.
You ought to meet a brother. Now there's a hood. Boy, he's so greasy he glides when he walks. He goes to the barbershop for oil change, not a haircut.
And now I get a chance to talk about Two-Bit, talk about all the guys in the gang, The Outsiders, the Greasers versus the Socias.
You guys know what Greasers are? White trash with long, greasy hair.
You know what a Socia is?
What?
White trash with Mustangs and Magic.
Of course, we're also going to talk about House of Pain with Danny Boy O'Connor. Pack it up, pack it up, pack it in. Let me begin. Jump, jump around, jump, 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 get down, jump. Oh, yeah. All right, Danny Boy O'Connor's talking about the 35th anniversary of The Outsiders, Francis Ford Coppola's masterpiece. We're getting ready to get into it, and we are in the middle of the Judas Rising Tour 2018. We begin again March 27th in Milwaukee at the Turner Ballroom, March 28th, Chicago at Bottom Lounge, March 29th, Grand Rapids at the Intersection, March 30th, Detroit Rock City at the Intersection. That show's about ready to sell out. If it hasn't sold out already, go try and get your tickets now if you can. March 31st, Dayton, Ohio at the Rockstar Arena. That's sold out. April 2nd, Cleveland at the House of Blues. April 3rd, Pittsburgh at Jurgles. April 4th, Clifton Park, New York at the Upstate Concert Hall. April 5th, New York at the Gramercy. That's about to sell out, so get tickets soon. Philadelphia, the Foundry, April 6th, sold out. April 7th, Portland, Maine at the Aura. April 8th, Hampton Beach, New Hampshire at Wally's. And remember, we're doing an early show that day. Come see Fozzie. We go on at 5. We'll be finished by 6:30. 7 o'clock, we're going to be staying in the venue to watch WrestleMania with all of you. If you want to watch WrestleMania with me, Chris Jericho, go to FozzieRock.com. Get your tickets now. And also come join us for the VIP meet and greet as well. We have one of the best VIP meet and greets in the entire business. We play a little concert for you. We do a meeting and greeting. We take pictures. We sign. We have a lot of fun. So go check it out. People at FozzieRock on the Twitter are saying it's the best VIP experience I've ever been to. I'm not going to deny it. All right. I'm also not going to deny that one of my favorite movies of all time is The Outsiders. We're celebrating the 35th anniversary of one of the greatest films ever. Ever with Danny Boy O'Connor from House of Pain. We're getting ready to start it right now.
Get your feet off my chair and shut your trap.
Who's gonna make me, huh?
I'm going to get a coat.
Who, your boyfriend?
Leave her alone, Dal.
That's a girl who just got out of some jail or something.
Yeah, sure. Whatever you say, honey.
You better leave us alone or I'll call the cops.
Oh, my, my. You got me scared to death. What am I gonna do now, Pony? Huh? This girl's making me shake.
Why don't you leave us alone?
You
be nice and leave us alone.
I'm never nice. Can I interest you in a Coca-Cola or 7-Up?
Get lost, Hood!
Okay, so I'm here with Danny Boy O'Connor from House of Pain, which is huge in itself. But funny story is we had a show in Tulsa with the WWE, and we have a mutual friend called Matt Hanrahan. He's our production manager.
Right.
I'm not sure how you know him. He's been on the scene for a while.
Through a friend from Brooklyn.
There you go.
Brooklyn Connect.
Brooklyn Connection. So he goes, hey, dude, I'm going to go by the Outsider's house. My friend Danny's, he's there or whatever. And I'm like, really? Like, I love the Outsiders.
Right.
Since I was 12 years old, I saw it in the theater.
Same.
I go to the place, the house where the Curtis boys grow up.
Sure.
And you're there renovating it because you've bought the house.
Right. Yeah. You know? It's a trip. When you say it, even for me, it's kind of weird because, it wasn't something I grew up thinking, like, I'm going to go to Tulsa one day, discover that the movie was filmed there, and then buy the house and turn it into a museum. But it's exactly what happened, and I couldn't be more happy with that. You know, just saying that, I have to pinch myself. But, yeah, it's been a weird series of events that have led me to this. So.
Well, let's talk about that. First of all, how did you end up buying the Outsider's house, so to speak?
I mean, so, again, it was like an epiphany. I was working like you were. We were playing Kane's Ballroom, I think, in 2009. And we had a 3-day layover, which means we were skimping on the hotels. It was cheaper to stay in Tulsa than it was probably in Dallas. So we were stuck, per se, in Tulsa. And I thought, this is great. I had like a couple years sobriety at the time. I was highly caffeinated, and I just bought a new camera. And I thought, man, I'm going to either be bored or I'm going to do something and just walk around the city and see what I can see. And as I started walking around the city, I go, Tulsa, Tulsa, Tulsa. Why does it sound so familiar? Oh, my God. I think The Outsiders was filmed here. So I ran back to the hotel room. I looked it up online. There was one little site called Tulsa TV Memories. And they showed a few of the locations, including the drive-in, which was recently, it had just burned down when I got to town.
Okay.
So it was a wooden screen. They gave up the drive-in location, which is the Admiral Twin, the park where Johnny kills the Soch, which is one of my favorite, you know, obviously scenes, which was Crutchfield Park. And then they said the house was close to it at 731 North St. Louis. So I got a cab, and even getting a cab at that time was hard to do because downtown, if you're an outsider, you know, pun intended, like myself, you know, 2009, Tulsa, Oklahoma was still going through its, like, the downtown was like kind of abandoned.
Mm-hmm.
When you were just there, it's a whole different animal.
Sure, the arena's brand new.
Oh, everything's brand new. There's a ballpark down there. All the businesses are up and coming and thriving, and it's going through its renovation, and it's amazing. The timing couldn't have been better for what we're doing with the house. But circa 2009, the only thing down there was Kane's Ballroom. And so I get the cab. I give him $100, and he takes me to those locations, and then he gives me a tour of the city. And I fall in love not only with the city that day, because it's a spectacular little Art Deco city that was built up on oil money, but the people were kind. It just had this, you know, Anywhere's USA vibe.
Yeah.
And it was very serene. And every 10 minutes or so would be interrupted by the most beautiful sound in the world, which is a freight train horn to me. And I was like, this can't be real. And then when I started to see the locations, I went to the drive-in first, which had just burned down. But you could just walk onto it. It looked just like it did in the movie. We went to Crutchfield Park, where, like I said, the scene with the Soches. And,
which you directed me to. I was there. It was cool.
Right, yeah. Which was cool, too. And then when I got to the house, I just couldn't believe that, you know, being a New Yorker who lived in L.A. most of his life, you know, if you like something in here, you blink and it's gone. You know, I was just telling you when I got here, like, you know, I'm like the old Pope of Sherman Oaks, you know. But even when I drive down Ventura Boulevard, like, things done changed. Like, I'm like, wow, okay, Chin Chin's still here, but I didn't know that, you know, this was there or that's there. So Oklahoma looked like it did in 82 when they filmed the movie, and that looked like 1960 whatever,
right?
You know, so I was like, this is incredible. At the time I had a BlackBerry phone, and the camera was just good enough to make nice photos on Facebook, which was kind of still a, not a new thing, but you know, we were all starting to like spread our wings with it, like what's appropriate to post, what's not. And then that night we play Canes, and somebody told the owner, hey man, Danny's friends with Jonesy from the Sex Pistols, show him that thing in your office. He goes, yo, come in my office, I want to show you something. And he goes, look at the wall. See the hole in there? And there's a frame around a hole in the wall. I go, yeah, what's that? He goes, Sid Vicious punched that in 78 when they did their tour here.
Wow.
And, you know, they thought you'd want to see it. So, you know, we've cut it out of the green room. We've moved into the office so that nobody messes with it. So I took a photo of that, and I took a photo of the outsider's house, and I posted it to Facebook, and my phone felt like it was like having a seizure. It was like from
everybody,
all the likes.
Reacting. Yeah.
And like, you know, any good, you know, attention seeker, I was like, wow, like I'm onto something here, you know. One, like I said, you know, I took some good shots. I posted some good stuff. People were like, where is that house? Where on the Warner Brothers lot in L.A. is that house? I'm like, dude, it's in Tulsa. People were like, what's a Tulsa? I was able to, you know, show the, you know, the hole in the wall, which Jones is like, yeah, yeah, mate, I already know, we already know, you know. But for me, it was exciting stuff. So I started saying, like, why don't I do this in every town I go to? Why don't I look for, you know, historic locations or true crime kind of locations or whatever,
yeah.
Right. So it becomes a little hobby. We call it the Delta Bravo Urban Exploration Team. I got about 30 or 40 core members with 100 on the, you know, outskirts. We kind of do it as a hobby on Facebook now, but it all starts at the outsider's house. And from 2009 till now, I've been, every time I go across the U.S., I make a beeline for it. It's like the new Mecca. And I'm always finding new fans that are like, dude, you ever heard of the outsider? Of course I do. I'm like, yo, you want to go see the house when we go through Tulsa? They're like, it's there? I'm like, yo, it's there. So I would take people through there, and every year, because it was, they were seeing it probably for their first time, but I was seeing it every year, and it just kept looking worse and worse, and things were getting like, you know, creepier and creepier, and it was like, what's going on with this place? Like, why isn't anybody taking, why isn't anybody taking care of it? And when I first went there, the house was for sale for $40,000. Now, I was just like, like I said, I was, you know, there was a decade of my life where I was out of my mind on drugs, living on a couch, you know, spent everything. So
making a lot of money, too, with jump
back
around.
Then, back then, you know, I was spending as quick as I was making it. But in 2009, I was starting to rebuild my life, so I didn't have a lot of money. But $40,000 is $40,000. It's still a lot of money, but also $40,000, I can't find an extra space to park a second car where I live now for $40,000 a year. And that's just a, you know.
And that's a priceless,
right?
You know,
and
monument.
So, yeah, I was like, I can't believe this is $40,000. And then I started, my inner voice said, relax, dude, this is how you get in trouble. This is how the sobriety and all the good stuff you're doing and putting your life together can spiral really quick, because that's the kind of stuff I do. I find a doorknob and I build a house around it. And I thought, I have no business, even if I had $40,000, you know, in my front pocket, I have no business buying a house in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Clearly, if it's only $40,000, nobody else cares but you, buddy. And, you know, take a photo and keep it moving. So again, every year I'd go back and forth, and the question would always come up in my head, like, why doesn't somebody buy this and turn this into a museum? And I kept saying that. And then one day I thought, you know, why don't you look into it at least, you know? Then it was no longer for sale. There were people living in there, and it was just looking ratty. And I thought, you know what? Let me find if I can find the owner and have my friend contact her, because I was scared. Like, you know, I finally got the contact through asking a friend that I'd met in Tulsa to keep pressuring the tenants for the contact, and she finally gave it up. And then I had another friend make the call, because I didn't want to mess it up. So everybody else was like, what are you doing, bro? Like, what are you interested in this house for? You know, you think it's $40,000 in Tulsa. So my friend made the call for me, and he goes, yeah, you bought the house. I was like, what are you talking about? I said, I told him, and I gave him instructions. Here's this lady. I want you to call her. Just tell her we're interested in the house. And if she's ever interested in selling, would she keep our number and give us a call? He calls me back 20 minutes later saying, you bought the house. I was like, what do you mean I bought the house? He's like, yeah, she asked for $20,000. I offered her 15. She took it.
Wow.
With the caveat that she won't sell it to you for the next 30 days because the tenants are 8 months behind in rent and they owe $4,000. And if she sells it to you now, you get that $4,000. So she wants the $4,000. And I was like, all right, dude, stop messing around. He's like, I ain't messing around, bro. And at the time, he had 10 grand of my money. So he was just looking for his other five. I was like, wow. And I was half like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. I'm in complete fear. What am I doing? I just bought it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I bought it sight unseen. So I get the house. I'm in New York at the time working. My friend who's on the ground in Tulsa goes to Cuba to see the Rolling Stones. He's like, dude, sorry, I can't go, you know, help you with this right now. I'll be back in 2 weeks. I'm like, oh, no. So by the time I'm able to go to Tulsa, I had to go by myself. My wife wasn't able to take off work. I get there, and I couldn't believe I bought the house, and I didn't even have the keys to the house. I had to sneak in a back window that was semi, like, open. And when I got inside, I also realized why it was worth as little as it was, because
trash.
Zillow had it listed as a house from the 40s. In reality, it's a 100-year-old house. We know that because when we started taking it all apart, we found newspapers
we
that
saw
were stuffed
those,
in the wall from 1919, 1920.
Yeah.
The house was originally on 7th and Elgin. And it was that which is downtown Tulsa. They moved it to North Tulsa, which is only about a mile and a half away from where it originally stood. That being said, the only thing that house needed was a brand new house. And so, and guess what I'm good at doing? None of that. If the car needs to get fixed or the house needs to get repaired, call a man.
I'm
the man that can pay for it, but I'm not the man that's going to be doing it. And I grew up the complete opposite of that. I grew up with a grandfather that was a master carpenter, and it gave us it's just weird that, you know, I was the last generation of where cars were, you could wrench on them yourself, or where we actually repaired stuff.
Uh-huh.
We live now in a disposable. We just throw it away. There's
call
no
the man
repairs,
to come do it,
you know? So it's an excuse, but I don't know. I let a man do a man's job when it comes to that stuff because I don't want to mess it up.
Mm-hmm.
So in saying that, there's power for me because it's the humility of it. Just saying, hey, I don't know what I'm doing here. Can somebody help? And that's hard for me. I'm a 6'6" alpha male. I don't want to ask for help.
Yeah,
I'll be like, give me that hammer. You know, stand back, boys. Let me handle this. But I just put the word out on social media. Hey, man, the floor is in terrible shape. The front part is 100 years old. The back part is all dogged out and missing. And someone says, hey, man, I got a friend, and call Roper, and Roper will come. And Roper come and look and said, I'll do that for you. I would like to donate my time, my service, and my boom, problem solved. You know, I just started meeting people one after the other. A guy, Donnie Rich, showed up and said, you know, thank you for allowing me to visit our generation's Graceland.
Because everybody had the connection to the movie.
Yeah, of course. And so people started coming out of the woodwork, which was shocking, not because I didn't think that there were more people like us that were that kind of fans. I just thought, well, why did it sit there for so long and nobody did what I'm
nobody
doing?
Had the idea, right.
You know, I thought it was like a no-brainer. And there's also, like, I'll back up a little. Like, I used to do a podcast as well with my friend Nako Nolan, who's a LAPD detective. And when we started doing all this urban exploring location stuff that I told you about, the Delta Bravo thing, we thought this would be a great idea for a TV show. So let's bring in some of our favorite actors from those movies, like Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Let's get Robert Romanus. Let's talk about not only the filming of the movie, but all the locations we had hit.
Great idea.
And I even got a drone and crashed the Fast Times at Ridgemont High pool because the lady wouldn't let us see it, which is another,
the famous,
you know,
Phoebe Cates scene.
Right, of course. And, you know, we would have Valley Girls, another favorite movie. So I'd have Deborah Foreman in, and we would talk about the, you know, the casting process and working with, you know, Cage and that era. Also, the locations, etc. So I was able to get Darren Dalton to come in, who is the tall Soche, you know, the main Soche with Leif Garrett. And he came in, and we were able
to. Daryl?
Yeah, Darren Anderson is his name.
Oh, Darren. Oh, he's Darren. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. And, you know, I remember we contacted him, and kind of at the same time, my cop friend got a hold, unbeknownst to me, of Essie Hinton through Twitter. He found out she was coming to L.A., and he hit her up, and he was like, yo, my friend is a big fan, and his birthday is this week, and I see you're coming to town, and I'd like to know if you'd sign a book for him. And I didn't know anything about it, and she agreed to do it, which I know Essie Hinton now, like, that's not in her wheelhouse to do, nor would it be, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's
out of nowhere.
Even for me, I'd be like, yo, see me when you see me, bro. Like, yeah, I'm not gonna just, you're not gonna just show it to my wherever I, you know, where I'm at, and just because you never know what you're inviting in. But somehow he did it, so we were able to get her to call in that night as well to our podcast while we had Darren there. So that kind of is like the soft introduction to Essie Hinton. So every time I'm heading to Tulsa, I start tweeting thing. Hey, heading to Tulsa. I always associate it with the Outsiders and this and that. And one day she responded and said, listen, if you ever find your way back, you know where I'm at. And I'm like, I'm here now. And she's like, yo, lunch tomorrow. I'm like, oh no. She just invited me to lunch. Now I'm scared. I'm like, oh my God, what? So we had that lunch. I told her, you know, how this all came about. And then I told her, this is before me even thinking about buying the house. But I did ask her, why don't you buy that house? I just got to know. I said, wouldn't that be a great museum? She said, listen, it's my book. I've done my part. If somebody wants to do that, that's on them, you know? Mm-hmm. And I thought, well, okay, I'll check that off the list. She's not interested. And that's when it started to spin in my head, like maybe I should think about doing it. So when I first bought that house, the first dude I talked to was Darren Dalton. That's Sosh. And I said, I tweeted to him, you know, private message. I said, Darren, I just bought a house, which he was like, cool. Like, probably, why are you telling me? Like, I don't want to care. Like, you know what I mean? If someone told me, I'm like, show off. Like,
good
what
for
do you?
You right,
yeah. And then I go, ask me where. And he's like, where? I go, Tulsa. He goes, no. I go, ask me what house. He goes, no way. I go, yeah, dude. I said, but do me a favor, keep it quiet because I don't want, I'm not there yet. I'm still in New York at the time. I still got to come back to L.A., and then I still got to get there. There's tenants still living in there. I ended up paying them to leave and just get their stuff, and they were 8 months in the rears anyway. They were evictable, but I was like, let me just make it soft for everybody that everybody's happy with whatever. But I didn't want, like, you know, nobody to...
You don't want, like, House of Pain fans coming around.
Yeah, or anything, and, even just, you know. So the next day, I get a little, you know, I grow a pair more, and I was like, let me... tell Essie Hinton because she's going to, you know, like flip out. So I did it the same way. I said, hey, you never guess. I bought a new house. She goes, yeah, I know. Darren told me. I go, never trust a Sosh. I never. So Darren, if you're listening.
And we're greasers too,
no, I'm saying. It's like, it's funny. When we first had him on the podcast, he goes, yo, when I see you, I'm going to give you a good dunking in the fountain, you know?
Oh, yeah.
So he's like 6'4". So when he came in the studio, he was like chest out the whole thing. And then I stood up 6'6". He was like, yeah, that dunking ain't going to happen.
And
I don't think.
Knows you got a switchblade in your back pocket, too.
Always.
You can't win. You know that, don't you? Doesn't matter if you whip us, you'll still be where you were before, at the bottom. And we'll still be the lucky ones at the top with all the breaks. Doesn't matter. The greasers will still be greasers, and socias will still be socias. Doesn't matter.
Let's go back to mentioning how you said we both saw this movie in the theater.
So I seen it at 13, Woodland Hills.
What was it that attracted it to you?
Nothing.
Did you know anything about it?
I didn't know anything about it. I went with one of the coolest dudes in junior high, whose name was Steve Sokolsky, which is another ironic twist because he ends up moving out by Darren Dalton and was neighbors with him, which we found out later. But this guy, Steve Sokolsky, was like the coolest dude, and he was like, yo, I'm going to the movies, you want to go? And I was like, all right. Like, he never asked me to go nowhere, whatever. We were cool. We were just, you know, it was junior high friends, but it wasn't like my main guy, whatever. Like, that was my boy. And so we went to see it, and when we came out of the theater, I remember him going, it was pretty cool. It's a little different than the book. And I'm like, the book? What are you reading for? Like, you know, we're like in eighth grade. I'm like, this dude had it all. Good looking dude, A student, all that. I'm like, this is where I'm going to curse, but I won't. But I'm like, you know what I mean? You read too. Of course you read too. But it stuck with me. You know what I mean? Oh, this is a book as well. But I went in that movie not knowing what to expect, you know? And keep in mind, like I said, classics of that era look like E.T., Fast Times, Valley Girl, there are War Games, whatever. You know, pick your thing, what you like. Ghostbusters, probably. So we're in this digital age of like the Reagan era and Pac-Man and Donkey Kong. And here comes this classic movie out of nowhere that's scored by Francis Ford Coppola's dad, directed by the guy who directed The Godfather, Apocalypse Now, etc. It launches the careers of the so-called, well, the amply called, I don't even know what I'm saying, the Brat Pack.
So the one you start shaving? It's hard. When I was 15. When did Derry?
When he was 13. Why? You figure you're not growing a beard for the Rumble?
Oh, you're funny. We gotta send you in the Reader's Digest or something. I heard they pay a lot of money for funny things.
Seven of the biggest stars ever that generation in the same movie.
And then it's visually like a 50s movie. It's like Grease but cooler because there's no dancing and, you
know.
Yeah, and then the story is like one of those... stories that I think everybody can identify, the haves versus the have-nots. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's just everything about that. And then Matt Dillon, you know, No Bruno, for me, was like, I want to be that dude so bad it hurt coming out of that theater. I was like, mm-hmm. that's the guy. And I could relate with Johnny Cade. At that time, he probably was older than me technically, but in the movie, he was younger. But I was sympathetic to that character and wanted to be Dallas Winston. Mm-hmm. So I came out. I probably had a denim jacket somewhere tucked from the 70s. And I went right to the store and started buying cigarettes, trying to, you know, do the Dallas Winston thing. It was just like that.
So I saw a commercial for it on TV. And my aunt was 10 years older than me. And she had hit me up to Stephen King and Essie Hinton.
Nice.
And I can't remember if I read The Outsiders, but I know I'd read Tex at that point.
Okay.
And so when I went to the movie, it was the same thing because, A, let's just go through the cast for people that don't know if there's anybody. Matt Dillon is in it, Tom Cruise, Patrick Swayze, Ralph Macchio, C. Thomas Howell, Emilio Estevez, Rob Lowe.
Yeah.
And all those guys, pick one of them, and it's like, oh, I want to be that guy.
Of course.
But Dallas was the one that you relate to the most.
And Leif Garrett, too,
Leif
which
Garrett,
was a big star.
That's a good call, too. And Diane Lane, super hot.
You know,
but I went, I remember after that movie.
And Darren.
Darren Dalton,
even
good looking guy.
Be telling,
yeah,
know,
he's the Zosh.
Tell him my secrets.
Yes, I went to my dad had an old fishing tackle box in the shed outside, and for some reason there was a pack of Player's Light, which is Canadian cigarettes, and there was three of them in there. And I remember I grabbed one and I lit it and I was smoking it because I was pretending to be Dallas Winston. And in my head, I'm hearing Gloria because that's the scene. GLORA.
Of course.
And as I'm smoking, Mom opens the shed door. She says, "What are you doing?" I'm like, I'm just trying to be Dallas Winston.
Yeah.
Just put that cigarette out.
Listen, if you told me any other character, I'd be like, you're weird right now. But I'll jump in on your weirdness because it was the same thing.
He was so cool. As you know, you ever played 52 Pickup?
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
And those are shout out to those are the Wagoneers. Two of those dudes are brothers in that scene. And they're at the event. They've been supporting since day one. I met them on Facebook.
Really?
Facebook, and we've become really good friends. And they're great dudes. But yeah, that movie opens, man. And I don't know what I'm going to see, mm-hmm. right? And it starts out, you know, he's writing into a thing about, you know, when I stepped out of into the sunlight
the
and I hear
theater.
The train.
Yeah.
And then next
I had two things on my mind. Paul
exactly.
Newman and a ride home.
And then they end up in a corner and he's like, what do you want to do, man? We're early. And he's like, nothing legal, man. Let's get out of here. And they start walking down the street. Gloria kicks on. They end up at a knife fight.
But with the little kids, I don't like little kids.
Exactly.
I just
they sneak
don't
into
like
a
them.
Drive-in. They chase little kids out the field. I'm like, oh, wow, this is like getting
trying to
right.
pick up chicks and
yeah,
making lascivious
he's looking at the
comments
ass on the way back. It's like, I'm like, this is my kind of movie, you know?
Yeah.
And then, yeah, I mean, think about this. You know, after they kill the Zosh, they run to go see Dally. Dally gives them $50 and a pistol. I've been to hell and back with cats that wouldn't give me $25 and a pea shooter or a sharp stick.
And the best line of all is, kill the Zosh? Good for you, kid.
Good for you. Come on in. Get out of those wet clothes. Yeah, no. And that's another. A lot of people trip out. They forget that Tom Waits is in that movie.
Right?
Tom Waits is the guy who answers the door.
Yeah.
Played Buck Merrill,
his
which
roommate
was the character's name.
Yeah. Right.
And, yeah, so that's a cool little Easter egg. I mean, if you're not familiar with the movie, or a lot of people that are familiar, like, that was him. I'm like, yeah, dude.
Mm-hmm.
And I was told that he had done a soundtrack for One for the Heart, From the Heart, that was Coppola's movie before that, and that's kind of how, you know,
oh,
he started.
The connection.
He was in Rumblefish as well.
Oh, right.
And both
right.
of those books were Essie Hinton books that were filmed on location in Tulsa, which is different than today's world. I mean, you know, I live right across from the Fox lot and, you know, and everything is filmed there or in the Warner Brothers lot.
They would just make their own Tulsa
in LA. It's too expensive to go.
Yeah.
Why would you go to Tulsa and bring all that production out there?
And she wrote those books when she was like 17, 18 years old.
She writes The Outsiders first. She was 16 in 11th grade. I'm told she failed creative writing. She got a D+ in English. The book has celebrated 50 years of...
As of a couple days ago, right?
Yesterday.
Yeah.
It's never been out of print. When she gets the deal the next year, they said nobody's going to believe this book was written by a woman, hence we're calling you S.E. Hinton instead of Susan Eloise because we do not want people to know.
Oh, to keep it ambiguous. Really?
And
no kidding.
She followed it up with all the other books you're talking about.
But how does a 16, 17-year-old kid from Tulsa get a book published?
Ask her.
Yeah, you know what I mean?
I think somebody had read it pieces of it and then knew somebody to send it to.
And then it just becomes this worldwide phenomenon, yeah. You know, because I guess everybody can relate to it in a way, maybe.
Yeah, because it's that coming of age thing. Like I told you, when we had it, so last year we threw an event and we had C. Thomas and Daryl Dalton.
And this is an event in Tulsa. Is it a charity event?
Fundraiser?
Yeah,
we were raising money. So when I got the house, I had no business buying the house even in 2016. Oh, yeah, 2016, the beginning of, because it's been just about a year for me since I bought that house. And I have no problem telling people, you know, my personal stuff. I had like $28,000 to my name at that time.
Even the huge hit.
Let's clear something up. When you have to write the huge hit, Everlast wrote Jump Around.
Oh,
so he
gotcha.
Got the publishing.
I gotcha.
I did all the merch and it was my brand and brainchild. Yeah. So originally in House of Pain, you know, I made the most money off of merch. Our merch deals were like 1.25 and I got 60% and get front loaded checks for, you know, $480,000 a clip, you know.
Yeah.
And I liked the Ferraris and big houses south of the boulevard and party favors. Yeah, and extracurricular stuff. And so, you know, you get paid one time for doing my job, you get paid forever.
Forever so with his.
I'm gonna tell you what Paul Anka told me, keep your publishing. I didn't write as much as Eric. I wrote literally 2% of those records. He was the master at doing that. I was the master at designing,
doing the aesthetic,
the brand, the logos, the whole thing. That was, you know, we were the yin and yang.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have to get out of bed. He makes more an accident than I make on purpose because of the publishing.
That's
You can't go to a sporting event without hearing Jump Around.
Yeah, you're right.
And, you know, and shout out to Everlast, man. He's a genius and he's great at what he does. And, you know, there's no animosity in that. It's just that's the way it goes.
Absolutely.
So we're on tour with another group that I do called La Cosa Nostra. And at the time, like I said, I had like... Oh, that's when I found the house. But when I went and reinquired about that house, I had $28,000 in my name and no foreseeable money in the pipeline because what I do is so, are we going to do another run of House of Pain?
Right,
are we
going to tour him?
Yeah, we don't. It's always so like, you know what I mean? We still haven't figured out a system of, are we still a band? Are we not a band? Is Eric solo and doesn't want to rap anymore? Does he down to do a St. Paddy's Day run? It just is.
Yeah. Being in a band is
We've celebrated 25 years of Jump Around this year. I'm 48 years old. In my 20s, if you would have asked me if I was interested in a career with stability, I would have laughed at you. Now at 48, all I want is some stability, man.
Yeah.
You know, and so, or I wish I would have just been a lot smarter with my money.
Right.
That being said, I had no business buying a house in Tulsa, Oklahoma when I live in Los Angeles, California. 15 is what got me in the door. Another 5 is what got the people out the door. So now I'm 20 into it. I got $8,000 left. Mm-hmm. I have no way on figuring out even how long $8,000 will last me here. And how am I going to even deal with what I just walked into, which was roaches everywhere, parting gifts. It took 3 days and 3 40-yard dumpsters to clear out the stuff that was left behind. Every piece of that house was... needed replacing. You got there like midway through, right after the holidays. You wouldn't even recognize it now. I can actually show you when we're done with this on my phone from the cameras that are set up that stuff. But it's been nothing short of miraculous. But I had to ask for help. And it's hard to ask for help, you know? I had a few people, I don't know, they're just random, you know, whatever's on the internet. Dude, well, how dare you? You're rich. Blah, blah, blah.
You know, you live
in Beverly Hills.
Yeah.
I live in a little apartment. I've been there 12 years.
Right.
I've been sober 12 years. I live in the little apartment 12 years. I keep it small.
Yeah.
I keep it humble. I try to stay in my lane and just, you know. So I did this for the love of the thing. I rolled the dice just because I figured worst comes to worst, I tried, and I'll just have to figure it out from here,
right,
you know? And so... I put a GoFundMe. We've raised about 50 total. It shows at like 32, but Essie Hinton originally gave us a $10,000 check, which I count towards the like GoFundMe thing, even though I got it directly from her. So I could frame that check.
That's cool that she contributed, though.
Yeah. The first benefit, I think all in, we made about $8,000, which was, we didn't make as much as we could have. We pulled in a lot more than that, but there were a lot of expenses that went into it that were unforeseen. So this time we're looking, you know, we're looking a lot better. We figured out a better way to do these events.
Mm.
And between what I did not anticipate, which has been a huge help, is people coming out of the woodworks with not only like supplies, but labor and skill and talent to be like, I'm a roofing guy. I'll do that for you for free.
Right.
We own an air conditioning and heating company. We're going to give you an $8,000 system.
Is that all because they're just fans of the movie and fans of the book?
Yeah,
wow.
And they love what we're doing. And they're locals who want to see, you know, this is a feel-good story, and the world needs another feel-good story, man, and more stories like this, mm-hmm. you know? And so, again, it's been very eye-opening for me, you know, in such a turbulent world that we live in now to see so much love for this project,
right.
which is nothing to do with me. It's everything to do with Essie Hinton.
And the film. Because I mentioned to you, like, I watched it with my family a couple months ago. My daughters are 10.
Right.
My son is 13. And they're crying when Johnny dies. They're crying when Dally gets shot. But they're making posters and they're writing, you know, the seven names on a piece of paper and sticking it on their wall.
Yeah.
It's a universal movie that transcends generations. It's like Wizard of Oz or something.
Yeah. Just,
you know, it does last forever.
Listen, I was telling you earlier, I've seen with my own two eyes, and I know a lot of people, not a lot of celebrities, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I have never seen people cry in person. I mean, I've seen it on like old Elvis clips.
Yeah, yeah. Or Beatlemania
Beatles,
or something.
Yeah, when the Beatles show up at JFK.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never seen it in person. When I saw Darren Dalton and C. Thomas Howell go out to the parking lot, because last year's event, it was like 18 and over, but we allowed the kids to come in a parking lot and we had a car show, and then they would sign their autographs there.
Okay, right.
And the girls were crying like the second coming, you know? Yeah. It was like, for me, it was surreal and scary at the same time. I was like, wow, this is like a power bigger than I've ever seen. And I know, like I said, I know a lot of brand name
sure.
acts.
Big time
that
guys.
People
yeah.
walk down the street and people are like, oh, there's, you know, what, I won't even drop. But, you know, yeah, I'll tell you later. But I'd be like, cool, pass the ketchup.
Yeah, right.
You know,
right,
you go
right,
up
right.
to the, I'll give you a tip if you're from out of town, go up to the Beverly Glen Center and just go eat up there and just stay there for an hour. Just go get a coffee up there and you'll run into everybody you've ever wanted to run into in your life. And nobody cares. It's like we're immune to that stuff. But The Outsiders in Tulsa is like everything.
Now, when you were putting on a benefit and you said, see, Thomas Howell comes, who's Pony Boy, and Darren yes. Dalton comes, are you throwing the net out to everybody? Is there some guys that are more akin to doing this and other ones that are like, ah, this is a movie I don't even care about anymore? Like,
well, okay, so that's a great question. So originally, we only had the connect to C. Thomas through, I'm trying to think, I think Darren and C. Thomas have stayed close friends because they also did the John Milius film Red Dawn together.
Oh yeah, that's right, yeah.
And so I know those two were buddies. So he was like, I can get C to come, I think. And then, so I felt like, let's not push anything, you know, let's have these two come through. And then this year we just want to see if we could get another person to come through that would just add to the excitement. So we got Ralph to come. I had talked to Matt Dillon. We talked through Instagram.
Oh, wow.
And he said, listen, it's been far too long. Right now, I'm in Sweden filming a movie. I miss the Cane's Ballroom. I miss Tulsa. Let's talk. You
nice.
Know, so hopefully, eventually, you know what I mean?
Because then Patrick's gone, so you couldn't get him. And Tom Cruise is probably in a different stratosphere.
And so
but people
ask about that, too. I'm glad you brought that up, because people are also, you know, so I was saying about the fundraising thing. At first, it was like, you know, I get fans going, like, you're a millionaire. You should be able to pay this for yourself. Shame on you. Why don't you throw a concert? Why don't you throw... If House of Pain was that functional, we work like that, I would have just thrown a concert, but it don't work like that.
It's not that
it
easy,
just,
guys.
It's like,
yeah, I understand.
You know, I just can't get everybody just to, you know, to and you know what? Cool. It just forces me to go another route. And so I asked for help. So you know, you have to be open to that criticism on a few, but it's only a few voices. But in my head, it's like those are the loud
That's
ones.
The majority,
I'm not hearing the 99% that are like, with pleasure, you
we'll
know,
support
here.
You. Yeah.
Right. But, what was I going to say?
We're talking about Tom Cruise?
Yeah, with Tom Cruise, it's like people are like, well, why doesn't he – it's a drop in the bucket. He could just give you $1 million. And I'm like, oh, God, stop.
People are crazy.
Like, here's the thing. This thing is authentic. I want it to stay authentic. It's going to stay authentic. And that means it's going to seek its own level. Like, it's like if they want to involve themselves, they will. I'm sure some people that are involved with this thing are standing back to see what we do
mm-hmm.
before they just jump in and open their, you know,
sure.
collection and say, here, I wore this in the film. You could just have it. Because next year I could, you know what I mean?
If it becomes a thing, like we had a show here called the Golden God Awards. It was like a heavy metal award show.
Okay.
And the first year it was okay. Second year we get Ozzy to come. Third year we get this band. band. 5 years in, Metallica shows up and plays for free because now it's a thing. It's legit. They know it's not a fly-by-night.
I respect that because I want to show improve because I want to show people that, there's
And the same thing can happen with you.
Of course. And so I know just my faith in that this thing is going to do what it's going to do. All I got to do is just keep on doing the work. I'm not saying it will happen. I'm just saying one day I won't be shocked if I get a phone call from someone, that's Tom Cruise's assistant and says, listen, his Learjet's sitting on the tarmac right now. We want to know if we can come in undercover, shake hands, kiss babies, is not in his, wheelhouse anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
But he'd love to see it. You could take photos. Don't publish until we're back in the air.
Right.
Or whatever.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean? Who knows? I'm just, this is, and if not, no doubt, it's all good. Doing it to honor the legacy.
Of course.
But those guys
would have to understand how special that movie is, too, because they've made hundreds of movies, thousands of movies.
But nothing resonates like that one.
But that one is something special, right?
Yeah, of course.
It's like when I talked to Will Wheaton talking about Stand By Me and how Rob Reiner and all those guys met up. Obviously, River Phoenix didn't, but they're all there because they know how special it is to the world.
Yeah.
And they want to just come and see
Shout
the boys
again.
Jerry O'Connell. Exactly, man.
Charlie's my boy, his brother.
Yeah,
so,
but they would want to be a part of that.
And that's written by
Stephen King.
Yeah,
right. Start.
That was for me. It was like, oh wow, I didn't know that. That's why it's so great.
Yeah,
it's
side of the story.
That's one of my favorites too. All those coming of age movies, they've got a different impact on us. You know what I mean? And they form your. That's why they're coming of age movies. Mm-hmm. They form your whole worldview at the time. And so there's this really great warm fuzzy connection. It's like before all that stuff happened to you, before you got hurt, before you got really cut,
before
deep,
you got jaded. Yeah,
yeah. And it's like you can always go back to those memories and
the
just
innocence
be like,
of youth.
Exactly. And there's none that do it better for me than the Outsiders. And now I know, because at first, like I said, I was shocked that someone hadn't done this prior to me. Now I know because the people with the least to give have given the most,
mm-hmm.
and I've seen how many people. I travel a lot, and everywhere I go, people are like, what's going on, bro? And I'm like, you're working on the Outsiders house. I'm like, well, why are you asking what's going on if you know? And that's all they want to talk about. They don't care about, it used to be, when's the new one coming, or what's going on this, or nobody cares about that.
Right.
Everybody wants to talk the Outsiders. So it's been special, and for me, it's something I have to protect and guard in the sense that if I don't look good, they don't look good. Mm-hmm. They might not feel that way. I'm sure, they do to some extent, but I make sure this thing is run right, that it's like,
in a way,
I don't try to take advantage. I try to make top, real quality stuff involved with it. That's why I'm a merchant branding guy, but I try not, I don't exploit it. I just make really, classy stuff to go along with it. We make it in limited runs.
Mm-hmm.
Most people are,
But in a way, you've become kind of the keeper of the keys now because you did take the responsibility of this is something you believe in. And, S.E. wasn't going to do it and Tom Cruise wasn't going to do it. But now you're doing it. You're part of the family, right?
And you should see the collection. I mean, I have no doubt to say we have the best collection of Outsiders, memorabilia in the world. When I was pulling in right now, I got a picture sent to me from our lawyer who just received Dallas Winston's denim jacket, who was donated by an author.
That's the one he wears when he gets shot, right?
Yeah.
He's wearing the denim, not the leather.
And it just came out of, we got the leather from S.E. Hinton.
Wow.
So I have that. I have both Mickey shirts, which are on loan for us for 2 years.
Both Mickey's?
Both Mickey Mouse shirts.
Oh, yeah, from 2-Bit.
Yeah.
He was my favorite.
Orange.
He was my favorite. Dally's obviously, but 2-Bit, I love 2-Bit.
Hey, listen, it's always, everybody's got their thing. It's like Kiss when you're a kid. It's
Paul Ace.
Okay, well, so there you go.
See, I loved 2-Bit just a little bit about the movie because in that opening scene in the drive-in, when the shit goes down with the Sosias, 2-Bit's the first guy to whip out his blade.
Yeah,
and he smashes
course.
The bottle and gives it to Pony.
Listen.
Jerry, what's going on? What are you doing? Just because we got a little drunk doesn't mean we have to.
You call reeling and passing out in the streets a little? Bob, I've told you before, I'm never going out with you when you're drinking, and I mean it.
That's no reason to go walk in the streets with these bums.
Who are you calling bums, pal?
You.
Randy.
Listen, we got two more of us in the back seat.
Pity the back seat.
If you're looking for a fight.
I am looking for a fight.
Come on, put
the knife
down.
Let's go. Come on, right now.
Come on.
Right now, right now.
All right, we'll go with you. Just wait a minute.
Why? We ain't scared of these bastards.
I hate fights, all right? I hate them.
That's he's what, the man. He's,
so for me, those are the things. Like I said, you know, it's all, you know, bravado if you're looking like, you know, nowadays, but as a kid, it's like that's all I longed for was an older guy to say, bro, I got you. Here, yeah. Hold that bottle.
Yeah.
Who you calling bums, pal?
Yeah.
Like, that's it. Like, let's do this. And prior to that, they were just arguing about, like, shut your mouth, kid. Mm-hmm. You know, talking about your family out of, you know, you're out of pocket in front of this girl. Later yeah. for her, keep your mouth shut about the circle, you know what
right,
I mean?
Right, right.
And then when this, like, who are these greasers trying to pick up on our girls? You know, like, he set it off on them. You know, pity the backseat. You know, boom.
And, pity and the backseat, yeah.
Yeah, so for me, too, that was the connection because I'm a latchkey kid, man, where, you know, grew up, my father was in prison and met him a few times, and my mother, like, probably didn't want kids. And
you were one of the outsiders.
Know, yeah, and so for you me, know, all yeah, I was looking for was that kind of, okay, I don't have, you know, that family unit, but I can make my own.
Yeah, you got your boys.
Out here.
Yeah.
And I wish it worked as good as it does in the movies, and it does temporarily, you know what I'm saying, but like in that movie that was like, okay, this could work, then this can substitute for what I'm not, what I don't have at home.
It's so interesting too.
I'm glad you said that because I forget, because although Matt Dillon is the coolest thing since sliced bread in that movie, Two Bits part in that, like I said, you know, it stuck out to me that Matt gave $50 and a gun, and think of it in 60s terms, that's like $1,000 and $500.
Yeah, yeah. But that's what we're talking about. Like each guy in that is like, it's like watching, like, let's say Cheers. Yeah. It's such a great show because it's an ensemble cast. And at some point, oh, I like Sam the best. Oh, I like Woody the best.
Of
I like
course.
Coach. It's the same in Outsiders. Cause I think of Rob Lowe, you know, when Pony comes in and he grabs, look at your tough hair.
Of
like
course.
That hits you the heart. Or Patrick Swayze being the older brother that's just trying to keep this family together
sure.
with these two teenage kids.
You well, know, Johnny's, he kills a man. He kills a guy for his friend.
For his friend.
His friend was going to get killed. I thought they were going to kill you when they were drowning. They were trying to drown him.
And, I killed
so
him. I killed that
killed
boy.
Killed that boy. Hell yeah, I killed that boy.
But then, and then he dies by doing what? Saving kids in a burning building.
Yeah.
It's like, these are all...
How does a 16-year-old write that?
I know, that's heavy.
When she's asked, and I've heard it out of her mouth, and I'm paraphrasing at this point, but she said it just came to her. She was like the vessel. Like it, that was.
Did she come from a broken home or anything like that? Like
no,
those
but
guys
I
did. Or?
No, but I think at a, you know, and I don't want to, you know, Google.
Sure, sure.
Thank God for Google. Google, you might hear a little bit more about it. But I think her father was having either brain cancer or something was going on with her father at that time, and maybe she went and
she had some
channeled her stuff
going,
through.
Right.
You know, that writing, but she said, well, we were at dinner a few, you know, last time I was in Tulsa, something about that thing kind of just came through her, that she wrote Rumblefish and she wrote Tex, but that one was different, and I don't bother her with that shit, you know what I mean? I don't want to chop up the minutia of, you know, I just, like, I love it, and I'm not smart enough to, like, have that kind of, like, you know, whatever. Thank God, you know what I mean? It's something to be said about just being, like, I love it as is, and so I think that's kind of what she likes about me probably is that I'm just, like, I love what you're doing, I love what you've done, and I want to, you know,
yeah.
And push it along as much as we can. And so I think the timing is right, too.
Yeah.
Think about that. Like, even, you know, as I look at my own career, there was times, like, where after the 90s, anything with the Shamrock or Green would make me want to throw up. Like, I was like, whoa, if I see another.
Logo for House of Pain.
Yeah, if you see another, like, Irish, Green, you know, Leprechaun, I'm like, ugh, because we just did it so much in the early 90s. I was like, God, I want to see another one again. And then as time goes by, you're like, you know, I miss that stuff. And it's actually who, you know, part of who I am. I'm proud that I'm an Irish American. And you know what? And that stuff was cool. And you know what? And you start to embrace it again. I think for years she might have, you know, was like what needed some break from that, or, you know, just
I think a lot of people are like that.
Of course. And but now that it's the 50th and it's
plus,
like,
she's getting up there. She's in her 70s.
Like, well, think about what author is alive and kicking and in great health when they have a 50th anniversary on that. I don't know if that might even be a world record. I'm going to look
wrote
that
it
up.
So young,
because I can't think. I mean, obviously, I'm not, like, you know, the knowledge of bull guy about, you know,
literary
like whatever, you know, that are still. But I'm going to guess to think that she might be one of the only ones.
Mm-hmm. To have that. Maybe King, Stephen King might have that with Carrie, maybe.
Did he write it at 16, though?
No, but he thinks he's a little bit older, but it's pretty close. I mean, she might be the only one.
That's crazy. You know? But
when you talk to C. Thomas Howell about this, does he realize how cool the whole situation?
I don't.
Do those guys look back fondly? Or
you'd have to ask him, because here's the thing. With all of them, I So I'm trying to think the best way to say this. And this is nothing, you know, I'm just gathering my thoughts. For me, like, how I, like, I have a lot of friends that are like, you know, super cool guys compared to me. And I like to think I'm a super cool guy. And the way I do that is not bothering them with the bullshit.
Don't fanboy.
I don't try to, like, and I don't be annoying with it. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so with them, I just consider them, I stay away from them. I leave them alone. I do the same with Essie Hinton. You know, every time I see her, like, when are you going to, I thought you were supposed to come have a beer with me. And I'm like, you know, I am sober. You know, you do know that, right? But I'll have a drink of ginger ale anytime you want.
Yeah.
But when I go to Tulsa, I hope she doesn't think that I'm blowing her off, or now that I got the house and everything's going swell, I don't need her. I'm
respectful.
Yes, and scared to, like, say something, because when you know what I mean? Like, I just don't want to ever mess anything up, and I take everything very seriously with this thing. It's not just like a, something to mess about.
Be a fanboy.
Or just, like, over wear out my welcome. So I'm like, hey, if you need something, let me know. Looking forward to seeing you May 6th. Stay gold. You know what I mean? Because I don't want to be that guy. And so I'm not. Yeah, that's it.
You know? I was the opposite. I did Dance with the Stars with Ralph Macchio. He was on the cast. And I was bombarding him every day. So tell me more about this. Tell me more about that. Yeah. He was super into it, though, man. He was like, it's one of the best experiences of my career.
He said
it's such a special moment. And that's why I can see him being involved in this, because from talking to him, you could tell genuinely it's one of the highlights of his career all these years later.
So for me, that the fact that people in the world, I think they remember him more for The Karate Kid is upsetting, because, I loved him in The Outsiders, and then The Karate Kid comes out, and it's a great movie, and he killed it. But I'm like, yo, bro, like, now you're some nerdy kid from New Jersey who's living in Reseda, and I'm like, from Reseda area, you know? I'm like, nah, like, you're Johnny, bro, you're dead.
You killed the Soch, man.
You killed the Soch, bro. Like, nah, no more movies for you. Stop. Because it was like messing with my whole, you know, he's doing Cobra Kai's kicking his, you know? And I'm like, nah. Like,
you gotta be Johnny forever.
Don't do that.
Let's talk about some of the, what are some of your favorite scenes from the movie? Because there's a lot of quotables in The Outsiders.
Yeah, there's a lot of quotables. I mean, again, when it first kicks off at that corner.
We're early.
What do you want to do?
Nothing legal, man.
I'm most upset that I never got to see the Bowen Lounge. And the Bowen Lounge is that checkerboard saloon or bar that they're standing in front of when Johnny and Pony go to meet Dally, and that's the first time you see Dally in the movie, and he's standing on the corner lighting a cool, you know, in his leather jacket and a St. Christopher medallion. And when they say, yo, we're early, what do you want to do? He's like, nothing legal, man. Let's get out of here. That for me is like, you know, that's my youth in a nutshell. Yeah. Like, whatever we do, let's keep it illegal and let's get down for ours and let's just get into trouble. That's what, you know. And then, you know, obviously when Johnny, you know, sticks up for his boy and kills the Soch, there's just so many pivotal little spots. The house always stood out because it was like a fort, and there was no parents there. You know, we know that from, you know, when he's dreaming in the thing and he sees the accident.
Yeah, the train hitting the train, cars.
Which I thought was like some stock footage from the 50s. They actually shot that scene.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah, and they crushed the cars. And unfortunately, I missed. So in 2009, they re-released The Outsiders as the classic edition. What do they call it?
I hated that. What do they do with it? They put cartoon, like, comic stuff on it?
No, I didn't see that one. I'm talking about when they... So Coppola re-adds scenes that were cut from the movie.
I got confused with The Warriors. The Warriors had that was horrible. That was terrible.
They should have never done that. No, I'm a fan of that, too. Don't start. We can do another podcast about all the other movies.
And there's a Fast Times one as well in there, too. Let's stick with The Outsiders today, yeah.
So they re-added all the cut scenes because Coppola's grandkids, I think, are asking, why is the movie so different from the book? And he wanted to show them, okay, we shot that, but it was edited different when it got to Warner Brothers.
Gotcha.
And I guess when it got to Warner Brothers, they're like, we don't get it. Let's make this a Matt Dillon, because he's the star. That's why I think Matt appears in just every, you know, they was like, this is his movie now.
Okay,
like,
yeah.
Let's turn it into that. So he makes it true to the book, but for me, it's like messing with my memories and my whole, my whole vibe is kind of like, okay, it's like, nice. This should have been a bonus DVD. So that's 2009. And I think in 2009, that's when a lot of things kind of like come out. Like, I forget what the original question was, but I know in 2009, like, things get sold from that. The car, I think he sold the car.
You're talking about the cars that got smashed by the train.
Right. So in 2009, I don't know why that year is special for the outsiders, but when he releases that thing, the guy who owned the junkyard who loaned those cars and they smashed them on the train tracks, they had them on like outside the junkyard for all those years. They sell their junkyard in 2009. The new owners could care less. They crushed those cars. So there was this weird rollover, this synchronicity of like, it gets new life in a DVD and does have a bonus disc where Essie Hinton's going to locations, but also in the parallel universe, all the stuff that was kind of like still hanging around starts to disappear. Yeah. So I do know where the original fountain that was built in that park was not true to that park. It was built for that park. Mm-hmm. And the guy who had that centerpiece cast from, you know, at a metal foundry still has that centerpiece and it's in his backyard. And apparently his mother adores it and doesn't want to come up off of it.
Yeah.
I think $1,000 should
that get granted the wheels.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. If he built that in 82, how old is dude?
Yeah.
And then how old is Ma? Like, can she see? Like, can we make something? Can we cast it in, like, you know what I mean? A grand will let you to come up off that, you know?
Yeah.
Like, so I think eventually that we will rebuild that fountain. But I'm just saying at 2009, and that's the year I get to Tulsa and discover that the movie is filmed there. So there's this weird thing that's going on with that. Again, completely spaced out on what.
No, we're just some of my favorite scenes. I like seeing when they're in Wendrixville at the burger place, and the little girl goes like, "Mister, you got a quarter? Yeah. Beat it, kid. You got a dime? Beat it."
Exactly. And she walks away. He's busy here, and he's putting the gun. He's poking his.
That was a close one. He says,
yeah. And then "Who's the little girl?"
I don't know. Oh, it's Sofia Coppola.
Yeah, Coppola.
Sofia Coppola.
Of course.
He goes, one of the quotes I use to this day is, "Man, this place is out of it, man. Let's get out of here."
So, he said, "What are they doing for kicks around here? Play checkers?"
Yeah.
And that thing was what kind of kicked the epiphany off. That realized that I was like, "What? What do they do in Tulsa here?" Oh my God, is the Outsiders. That was the line that sparked me to remember.
Because this place is out of it, yeah.
Just because, we were downtown at the Hyatt. We had 3 days off. Again, I'm the only one that's not, getting zooted. You're smoking, Bob Marley cigarettes. And
yeah, right.
They can pacify themselves, mean, and chill out.
Sure.
I'm like the opposite side of the spectrum,
You got to get out of the room or
I'm
else you will start.
Yeah, and I'm like overthinking everything. And so we ended up renting a van. We just called a company. I think there was like one company. Downtown was dead as a doorknob. We got a van to pick us up, take us to the Woodland Hills Mall, which is in Tulsa. And I think we bought like a bunch of, DVD box sets of every TV show that was out that time, some new sneakers that we didn't need that we already had 10 of, it was just boredom.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And on the way back is when I started thinking, what do people do for kicks around here? Oh my God. Was the Outsiders film.
Wow.
That's the driver who knew, and he goes, "Yes." I said, "Dude, I need you to take me to these things. Let me go up to the hotel room and let me look this up, see what I can glean from that," which again, there was nothing online really about where. If you were local, I guess you knew, but
right,
I didn't
right.
know, And this guy gave me the $100 tour, as it was, and again, I fell in love with the whole thing, and it's so nice. I can't tell you how much growth has happened in that city, and it's finding its like third wind. I know it was like Indian territory, then it's the oil capital of the world, and then it was like telecommunications and Williams. They used those pipes that pumped out oil to do fiber optics, and then it goes bust. And now, like Nashville and like Austin, even though I know that people don't like that comparison, it's true. They've found their identity in the arts via Leon Russell and J.J. Cale, and somebody put a $2 million Bob Dylan collection that they put down there, and they got the Guthrie Green. It's an outdoor thing, and every Sunday, I think, in the summers, they give free concerts.
Mm.
Kane's Ballroom has always been the staple and the anchor downtown, which is any of your favorite bands have come through and played that. And even when they get more famous than God, they come back and play it again just for bragging rights.
Right.
Across the street, the land was just donated to the OK Pop Museum, which had just been funded a couple years ago. Took them a decade to get the state to pay for this, so they're making an Oklahoma Pop Museum, and Tulsa has it.
Arena is great down there.
The arena, the BOK Center.
There.
They've redone all these hotels. I'm looking to live in the Mayo myself. Originally I was like, let me rent a little house, but I was like, it'd probably be better just to get,
stay in a hotel, yeah.
Well, yeah, and then they have apartments in there that they've made there.
Okay.
It's hotel and apartments, and it's the oldest one. It's the one you see in Rumblefish when they're going through the city and the clouds are going. It says Mayo on the top.
Oh, okay, right.
It's a beautiful building. And, I mean, there's just with, let's just say, The Outsiders and Rumblefish never happens, it's still something down there. There's something magical about Tulsa.
Sure.
And I needed that to happen for me, because if this thing was in Poughkeepsie, you know, or whatever, I would have been like, oh, it's fantastic. I got a grand I can throw into the GoFundMe, and I'll help. Y'all do logos, right, whatever you need.
Right.
But I ain't moving to Poughkeepsie. I'm not hanging out in Poughkeepsie. And nothing against Poughkeepsie. I'm just throwing another the bus.
That's an example,
Schenectady,
yeah,
or whatever.
Yeah, whatever.
I'm just not trying to be there. You know, Tulsa, there was just something there, man. And, you know,
the vibe of the small town.
Yeah, you know? And then I took my wife, and she was like, I don't know what it is, but I understand what you're talking about, you know? So,
let's, as we wind down here, let's just go through the characters. I just want to see, like, what was your favorite memory of them in the movie, if we start with Dally?
Dally, like I said, you know, we want to do nothing legal, man. Yeah. I mean, it just, you know, keeps going from there.
Well, the Do It For Johnny scene is iconic. That's in cinematic history.
Of course.
You know, if you're smart. Could touch you, man. Nothing could touch you.
He stole the movie, as far as I'm concerned.
He did.
You know,
That character was written for that, though, to seal the movie.
Yeah, and I know a lot of people had auditioned for that character, too. I think Darren Dalton told me he had auditioned originally for that character.
Who else auditioned for that you know? The top of your head.
I don't want to mess it up because I'm not good at keeping all those things. But there's a lot of people who tried to get
it. It was probably a hot ticket in town. Mickey Rourke?
Yeah, a lot of people who ended up in Rumblefish after, you know, were also auditioned for it.
Yeah, yeah.
There's actually, that's, I think, part of that the bonus disc that comes with the 2009, you know, complete novels, what they're calling that one, where he added the scenes, they show the auditions. So
the
Kate Capshaw audition for, you know, Sherry.
Sherry's part,
yeah. And there's people who, you know, we didn't know until you see these things that were up for that thing. But when Darren said he originally read for that, it was crazy. I think everybody was trying to get that thing.
Probably a hot ticket in town,
Yeah, and, you know, there's kind of this weird route that Matt goes, because he does Over the Edge, which is his first movie, which is one of my favorites, and one of the guys on Over the Edge gets brought in to do Tex, which was the first movie that they adapted from an S.C. Hinton book before The Outsiders happens. And I think S.C. Hinton was friends with, I forget the guy's name on Over the Edge, that said, hey, we got this new guy called Matt Dillon, you should take a look at him for Tex. And then they hit it off. So then she, because if you read the book, which I didn't read for years later, so I didn't read the book probably till 2010.
Outsiders or Tex?
Outsiders.
You never wrote the book till 2010?
No.
No kidding.
Bro, I'm not built like that.
Wow, okay.
I'm built, you know, I'm nice with my hands, but, you know. I'm not like that. I'm just never interested.
So what did you think when you read the book finally?
It was a trip, because now I understand when people are like, wow, it's so different than the film. And if you know the book, then you know that Dallas Winston is a tall, blonde-haired guy.
Yeah.
How does that work, you know? But it doesn't matter. When I see the movie, I mean, there's no other person on the planet that I could think
that
could have pulled it off.
Absolutely.
And the greatest part about that is that when you talk to S.C. Hinton, when people ask, will there ever be an Outsiders 2? And she's like, never. Thank God. Because so many people are so quick to go back to the well.
How could there be? There's only five of them left.
No, but you never, listen.
Right. Pony Boy's cousin comes in from
listen, and they did a TV show. You know, there was a TV show in the 90s, and half my friends, you know, David Arquette, Robert Russler, trying to think who else, Pruitt, all these dudes that were in that, you know, we were all running around in Hollywood in the 90s. We were all at the Roxbury. Everybody was auditioning and were part of bands. We were all like a clique of. So they did a 1990s version of The Outsiders, and it takes place the day after Dally dies.
Oh, wow.
And it was on Fox, and S.C. Hinton wrote it, and Coppola produces it, and it just doesn't. It doesn't translate.
You can't go.
No, but thank God they never tried to redo, because then it becomes, you know, Fast and Furious.
I'm surprised they haven't tried to redo it.
Oh, they've tried, but I'm glad that she stood firm on
she won't allow them.
No.
Okay, so there'll be no remake with Nick Jonas and, you know, Zach, his name is, Zac Efron. Okay, what about Derry?
I didn't like him in the movie because he was an authoritarian.
Yeah, father figure.
Yeah, exactly. He was cool. The only time he becomes really cool to me is when they go, how do they know each other? They used to pal around, play football together. And even though they were buddies, he's like, I don't care. I'm still with these dudes.
Yeah.
And I got you.
When he said the only thing that makes Derry a greaser is us.
Yeah, of course. That's when you get that empathy. Yeah. That's when I get empathy for him. Not when they say that on the bus, but when the fight's about to jump off.
He's up against
his boy. And
instead
of trying to be like, hey, man, chill out. We don't have to. He's like, I got you. He's
I'll
like, good,
you.
Let's do it. Let's roll.
Like,
he's still like, he makes his clear choice. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people in in life that ride the fence.
Yeah,
you know?
He would stand up for his
brothers. You're my boy, but yeah. He's my boy, too, and I'm just going to be, you know, go along to get along.
Yeah.
And when push comes to shove, eventually, man, like, that's what kind of defines us as people and our character. Like, you got to make a choice, bro. Mm-hmm. You don't always, but that's also a choice.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't like dudes that are like, you know, I get it, like, you know, you fall out with the ex and you want me now to delete her and, you know, and,
yeah,
and
yeah,
that's
yeah.
a little like, all right, bro, are you sure you guys are done? You know what I mean? I mean, it's not petty stuff, but when the rubber hits the road is where it's on and he makes that clear choice.
Yeah.
So Derry, as a character, I don't like him almost until the end of the movie.
And he redeems, yeah.
Right. Johnny is great because he's the pet. You know, that's what they say. You're like, he's the one you want to...
He's the mascot.
Yeah, you feel like, yo, let's look out for him. And I love that Two-Bit does look out for him and give him a little, you know, change at the movie, whatever. Get one for Johnny,
get
one for Johnny
too. Right, get a popcorn for Johnny. So
yeah, I mean, it's like, those are the little things that, even at 13, that resonated with me. Like, usually it's the opposite. Like, later for you, Johnny, poor, you know, you front him off.
Yeah, yeah.
You bag on him, you snap and tell him, you know,
right,
you can't afford popcorn, and you and your boy go get some, because that's how I grew up, and people were not looking out for each other, okay? So I like, that's the kind of thing that I like.
What about Steve? It's funny that the biggest star out of all of them has
the smallest part. Steve was just, I didn't even think of Steve because it's so inconsequential to the movie. He's just there.
He's just another guy. Yeah, the only thing I remember from him is who does the backflip off the car.
No, of course.
Which
and
is
his tooth that he took out. That's the story. I just got contacted from the dentist that pulled his.
So what happened with his tooth?
There's a whole thing about he's got a weird dental structure that his main tooth is in the middle, not two front teeth. Google that one. But I guess he had bad teeth back then, so a dentist pulled out his cap so he could look all
tougher,
rugged.
Right.
And I just got hit up from the wife of the dentist who says, give me your email, I want to send you stuff. And he wants to talk to you. The dentist wants to talk to you. So he's probably got...
Maybe he's got one.
That's why I asked. He said, well, give me your email. She wouldn't commit to anything. So, but he's, again, like, you know, and like I said, you ain't going to call, nobody's going to call the fuzz in this neighborhood. They know better.
Yeah,
that's where you're like, all right, we need him too.
He's just one of the toughs.
Yeah, but we need him too. You know, put him in there. He's a good to have
around.
Did
you ever notice that Pony Boy has like a...
Yeah,
a
it looked
cut,
like
a mole or something.
Yeah, so in the original cut of the movie, I'm like, it reminds me of Stand By Me when they're in the water and they come out with leeches on
everywhere.
There.
Yeah.
I'm like, why has he got a leech on his neck? And it never explains that. That's why the book does the storytelling, and the movie was cut so weird. The restored version is they've got him down. The socius got him after he comes out of the movie behind the outsider's house.
Oh.
And they give him a cut on his neck to let him know they ain't playing. And then everybody realizes that they've got him. And everybody comes out from the outsider's house, the Curtis house, and they jump in their Corvair and split. And they get stuff thrown and jumped on the car.
That's right, because that's how it starts. When he walks out of the bright sunlight.
The Corvair sees him coming out.
And then he gets jumped.
They start talking to him, you know, like, go, Greaser, get a job, get a haircut.
Yeah.
And they start following. They finally get to the outsider's house and back, and that's when they jump out and they cut him just to let him know.
I forgot about that.
And so that's how he gets that. But if you didn't see the redo, you didn't see the 2009, you're like, why? That's what is that? Because I look like a leech. Yeah.
Mole leechy
thing.
Yeah,
I don't know what that was. So again, at 13, I didn't stay up wondering at night. I remember mental noting it, but then who cares?
Let's
move on.
Yeah. And then one of the greatest movie names of all time, Soda Pop Curtis.
Yeah, no, I mean, and
his role was pretty trimmed down in the movie too.
And I go on about not being well read, if it's a subject of interest, I have read everything about it, and so reading his. Stories I only tell my friends.
That's his autobiography.
Yeah, he goes into the Outsiders bit, which is a good little read. It's a quick read too, and that's coming from me.
Yeah. What does he say?
He says, "Yeah, he was heartbroken that he didn't get invited up to the premiere that they had at the Lone Star Elementary, which was the librarian who asked her students, 100 of them or more, to write letters to Coppola to encourage him to check out this book that is resonating so well with her students, and if they could possibly find a way to turn it into a movie, which he does. So when they premiere it, they go up there, and if for whatever reason his invite doesn't come.
You're kidding me.
And when I think they all kind of got together. They were all friends from Malibu area or whatever. And I think Emilio Cruz and him, I could be wrong, but they all go up to Westwood on the low, and they see the movie on their own, and where they see the trailer. But then when they go to see the movie at the premiere, he's gutted because he's like, where's my scenes? What happened? Nobody told him that they edited it that way. And I've been told, again, all of this is hearsay, so sure. I don't ever want to be like, this is the guy who, you
we're
know.
We're fans of something
right.
you've heard.
Yeah. I've heard that, you know, towards the end of the movie, Coppola's mind was already on doing his Rumblefish thing, and that was going to be his, like, artsy-fartsy, like, statement
film
piece.
Noir, yeah.
And that he let his brother or the other editors kind of like, here, take and finish that for me.
Wow.
And then when they get it to Warner Brothers, they're like, this thing needs to roll a lot quicker. It needs to be, it needs to just, and Matt Dillon's the key guy here.
Right.
So let's cut all these, trim all this stuff away from it.
It's based around Matt Dillon and then the relationship between Johnny and Pony. There's your movie, right?
Right, but the book doesn't read like that.
Yeah, no, it doesn't.
And there's other characters that, you know, like...
Because Steve and Soda are dating sisters, or they both have girlfriends or
and
something?
And she's still in Tulsa. forgive me because, again, I've got the clock in my head that's looking for the file, but the file is currently unavailable. What's her name? Gosh, she's great. And I've met her online. She's coming to the event. So there's a girl in photos, if you Google up Soda Pop, and it's him and Sandy.
Sandy,
that's her
yeah.
name in the movie. And she still lives in Tulsa, happily married, and still looks great like she does at 16 when she, or however old she was. But there's scenes where they're cut out of, but he has a girlfriend, and, there's other stuff. So, yeah, that's like the deeper cuts. But
I like that one scene when it's like, how old were you started shaving?
Yeah.
13. How was Darren? 14.
And that's what I'm saying. It's kind of when you're at that age, man, it's like the embarrassing stuff you don't ask your boys, but you can hear it third party and go, I already knew that. Dude, I'm already doing that. But you got you gleaned that insight, you know?
Yeah.
So my only disappointment with this whole thing is in 2009, when he does do the complete novel, that for whatever reason, Coppola decides to take off his father's score from the movie, because Carmine is the one who did the score. That's why it sounds like a classic from, you know, a bygone era.
Sure.
And he puts in like surf rock, Dick Dale type.
I knew there was something in it that pissed me off, and that was it.
Every time you see a clear, like, high def scene on YouTube, it's been taken from the, and it's got like Elvis and
I don't think they even use Gloria, Danny. I can't remember. Something really bothered me about
that. No, I think they
use
Gloria.
Okay.
Just for you to know, that's the only song that appears in the original movie, and that's only because Essie Hinton demanded it. And she said that was her favorite, and that needs to go in there. And they listened
everything
to
else
her.
Changed, but
everything
that.
Else was her. Well, that no, that's the reason it ends up in there in the first place.
Okay.
And everything else was the score from Francis's dad, and he was a big conductor, music guy in Detroit.
Sure, yeah.
And he was Mr. Ford. What's his name?
Carmine?
No, the Ford the
Francis.
Car.
Oh, Henry Ford.
Henry Ford's favorite guy and conductor. That's why Francis is named Francis
Ford
Coppola. So they're already, his dad is already a star on the radio and a big band leader, conductor, you know, composer in Detroit.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where his like bona fides comes in for the film. Carmine's doing the score for the outside. That's why it sounds so real and authentic, that it wasn't just, you know. And the added thing is, yes, the opening has Stevie Wonder, which I don't know how that ends up, and it's fantastic
classic tune.
It's the opening, it doesn't really appear in
it's like
the
saddest song of all time.
Yeah, of course.
It's just like it sets the tone. And it
somebody that
tone.
Was like 14 sent me a video of her singing it, and I was like, oh my, I almost cried, because yes, she was like, she nailed it. And I was like this little girl, like on like I'm like, oh my god, like it's still, it's crazy that a film from 83
well, sure.
comes out and girls that are 14 are tagging me on Twitter in videos that they're singing a snippet of the song, you know, of Stay Gold. It's crazy.
No, so. I mean, like you said, that when you see, like when I did the Tonight Show, I was the second guest. The first guest was Diane Lane.
Oh, wow.
And to meet her, I mean, we've met so many
course.
People, like you said,
we're
boys
into,
with
all
like
kinds of people,
whoever, don't want to drop
but
any
is
names.
A different
but
cut.
Ran into her.
It's like,
and to me, she looked like she did when she was probably 16 in that movie.
It's crazy.
I was just like, oh.
It's crazy.
I love you.
No, I know. And so for me, that's the same way. And that's why, you know, I feel like even when, and there's been a ton of ups and downs in let's say my career with, you know, I'm doing air quotes, and I still know a lot of like really cool people because I've always been respectful of their thing, and I don't step on toes. Like I try not to, you know what I mean? Over where my welcome, and for 25 years, I've had the best friends that one could have in this town.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Because I keep it 100.
Mm-hmm.
And when I look back to movies, there's only a certain amount of movies that I'm like, even with Fast Times, like just that I'm, that's, you know, me and Robert Romanus are friends, and he's coming to Tulsa. Because when I told him what I was doing, he was like, that's fantastic, Danny. He still talks like he does because that's the way he talks in the movie. He goes, Danny, I'm not only a fan, that book changed my life. When I read that, it was the whole, he's like, I think I auditioned or I wanted to audition for that. I said, well, will you come to our event? I would be happy. So he's coming.
Dude, I just did a book where I based, like, it's like a, it's called No is a Four Letter Word, and it's how to live your dreams and don't take no for an answer type thing. And each one's based on a principle, like, you know, like the Vince McMahon principle or the Gene Simmons principle. I have the Mike Damone principle, which is anywhere you are, that's the place to be.
That's the attitude. When you got that, you got the attitude, right?
See what I mean?
When you're bored, I'm going to bring him in.
Oh, I'd love it.
Not because you know,
dude, we should do
when you're bored. I didn't mean to say it like that. It's easy. But when you see my Fast Times collection is only second to my Outsiders collection, you have
there's
no
our
idea.
Next, there's a sequel to
no,
the
you
podcast.
Have no idea how thorough I am with it. He's the greatest guy on the planet. He's also coming to Tulsa as a fan of the movie and book, but also as my friend, and it warms my heart. Slim Jim Phantom from the Stray Cats.
Oh, great. And with Lemmy's band,
and
Head Cat.
Of course, Head Cat. But every time it comes on TV late night, I get Slim Jim, hey, pal, you know, it's on again for the 100th time. I'm enjoying it just as I did.
For Outsiders or Fast Times?
No, the Outsiders. He loves Fast Times, too. Yeah, who doesn't love that, you know? This thing has such a broad range of people, and there's a ton of other people, you included, who were busy and couldn't come back.
I've been in Atlanta that night.
No
I've
doubt.
Been there,
but it's cool because I don't, so growing up, I watched like Jimmy Superfly Snuka, and I watched like the T-Birds do the, you know, the roller derby. That would come on the Sundays. It would be like WWF, roller derby, and kung fu flicks. You know what I mean? And so when I look on your accomplishments as well, I'm like, oh my God. Like, if you never read the Wikipedia, I mean, all your fans listening, they know. Yeah. But for me, it wasn't in my wheelhouse. And,
but dude,
and it's crazy because that's what, like, I want your fans to know too. Like, I get a call from a guy I don't know who says, I know your friend from Brooklyn, and I'm in town with WWE, and we want to stop by the house. Me, Chris Jericho, and possibly Chad from the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Oh, Chad was going to go too.
Yeah.
I didn't know
and
that.
So I was like, yeah, okay, when do you want to go? Because, you know, we're running and gunning over here. So he said like 2:00, and then 2:00 came, and then he was like, oh, I won't be there till 3:00. And I'm like, all right, now you're
pushing
it.
One of these things,
You know, like, listen here, bro.
Yeah,
like, 3:00 comes, and I'm like, I'm salty. You know, I go from like...
You've been around.
I go from chilling to killing in like, you know, 0 to 60. So I was like, all right. And then me and dude, we start talking, and then we break bread. And he seems like a great guy. And I'm kind of like, I ain't seeing no Chris Jericho and no Chad, you know, so you really opened the door with you dropped a few names and you got me.
That old
trick. Hook was in my mouth, you know, at that point. And he's like, yeah, they got caught up, blah, blah, blah. I was like, you know what? I liked him on his... usually I can't say that about everybody that comes through
on
that
his
house
because
a lot of people come through. But we just built off the Brooklyn thing and whatever, whatever. And so I show him the house. We exchange numbers. All good. It's raining. I get in my car. I'm heading back to where I'm headed. It's a long day. But I get up at like 4 a.m. And I'm an early rise guy. And I get the text, hey, Chris Jericho's on his way over there now. I'm like, oh, man, I'm already like, and I was like, all right, I'm coming back. But what impressed me about you is that you just came by yourself. You didn't know who I was from, you know, a hole in the wall. You were a fan, and that was enough to, you know, for some people, like even myself, like I grabbed my road manager the first time by the neck and said, dude, you're coming with me. He's like, dude, I got things to do. I'm like, no, you don't. You work for me, you know, and I'm giving a noogie, like, you're coming with me. And I let a lot of things stop me because I don't have people to go with. You know, it's the Johnny Cade thing. Like, I need my boys to roll with me because I don't know this dude from this band that's got this house that's, I'm a fan, but I don't want to express it, you know. So it made a really good impression on me in the sense that, like, you just showed up with your thing, you had your coffee in hand.
And just
and
so
we
you
just
know,
had a nice little, you know.
I didn't know that you guys were going to be there. I was just going to drive by the house and just look at it
up,
and take a picture.
No.
And that's what I was doing. And then you guys were in there. I'm like, oh my gosh, the guys are there.
And there was
I had
another
no idea.
Guy
that's
from
why...
the newspaper who was already there trying to to get some photos, and you're like, "Who's this guy?"
Well, I didn't know what was going on.
But it was great that you showed up.
But that's why I kept you waiting, because I didn't know you were there. I'll just drive by there later on in the day. I wasn't aware that you guys were actually in there doing stuff.
Right? No. Yeah.
Tanner had just said, "Well, the Outsiders' house is over there. My friend has it."
Yeah, see?
So that was like, and then here's the best part. Once we finally meet, you have this connection of loving the Outsiders, just like if you love Kiss or whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't have to be friends or know each other. That's your middle point.
No, of course. That's the thread that ties us all together.
Which makes you friends. So,
and that's what was great. And you came through. And when I posted the photos, everybody was hitting me out of left field. You know, it's just, I never, you know, you think you know everybody. And then I was like, dude, what did you tell me?
World,
I'm like, I didn't even know. Like, it was this whole other, you know what I mean? And then I start turning on the television, going through the channels. And I'm like, I see you on every, like, do you guys work every week? Are you guys
every
doing
Monday night is Raw, yeah. Every Monday night is Raw, yeah. So it's
and those crowds, man, it's full arenas.
Yeah, man. You know, not
shame
all the time.
On me, man.
But yeah.
I mean, I know about, you know, the stuff, but. You've been doing it as longer than I've been doing hip hop.
Yeah.
I'm 25 years professionally.
Yeah.
And I look back and I'm like, I see your career and the most impressive, you know.
But that's the thing. But even for me, like, okay, House of Pain, I jump around. Now I'm doing my research and getting into it. Now every time I hear that song, that's my boy's song.
Exactly. No doubt.
You know, and that's one thing I love about situations like this, where, not to get too metaphysical, but you're talking about how things, 2009 was a real happenstance.
Oh, yeah, ties into. Oh, no, listen, I'm big on all that stuff. Listen,
you know?
I don't believe in coincidences whatsoever. And there's a lady who came to the house and offered her services to do the exterior, you know, the what do you call that? Not the gardening, but the when they do fancy
landscaping
stuff.
Or whatever.
And she said, I tried to buy this house last year and the lady wouldn't come off the $60,000 number.
Wow.
We didn't have the $60,000 at the time, so good for you. But I was like, wow, a year sooner and she wasn't coming lower than 60 grand. I got it for 15. Why does those things happen?
Sure.
Why do you meet the people in life you meet? You know, so I don't look at any meeting, good or bad, with that it wasn't meant to be. It was meant to be. And what's the takeaway? Either it's good or a lesson for me to learn, you know?
Right.
So it doesn't sound like hokey to me. That's actually really,
makes sense.
And that's, I think, why we bonded, even though, like I said, you know, like, obviously I'm aware you're a famous wrestler and the WWE is probably the biggest since sliced bread. I actually painted with a few of my friends that actually, here's another tie. So here's a weird one. The guy from Brooklyn that your guy knew, I flew him out here with me to paint the WWE canvas. They had a show on MTV and then you guys had just lost the name WWF because of the Wildlife Federation to WWE, and it was called
Raw is the show.
There was something on MTV that they were doing.
Was it Tough Enough?
Yeah. We painted the canvases.
Really?
But that canvas is treated with some non-stick, so the graffiti we were doing wouldn't stick. And it was like this hot day out in, like, you know, the valley and, like, you know, Canoga Park somewhere on a back thing. And we painted the WWE, and it was exploding out of the rocks. And so it's just this weird little intersection.
Yeah, for sure.
And that's the same guy that your man knew from Brooklyn that dropped the thing that... That's how he knew me.
And so
how
the connection was there, right?
I'm just thinking this out loud right now, and to everybody else, they're like, "Yeah, these two are really corny with the meta, you know, with that stuff." But it to me, those are the good things in life. Those are the weird little like things that are we really are all connected. It just
what's the connection?
Yeah. So
last question for you: is your overall goal for the Outsiders Museum is to have like a front desk where people buy a ticket to go inside?
Yes. So great question. So it is a nonprofit. We just got in record time. It's hard to get that, you know, and we got it like in the accountant said we have never seen anything like it, and how, again, I attribute it to the power of the Outsiders. That being said, there are a lot of things that need, even though we've pretty much with this event that's coming up, we'll have the money to totally restore it and, you know, turn it into the museum. It has a lot of bills and. It's going to need a lot of, you know, maintenance and care and employees. And so we are a nonprofit, but there will be a charge to come in. And kind of like, I just was lucky enough to be in Cleveland and go see the Christmas Story Museum. And there's a million parallels to what we're doing to that museum. The guy said he cried twice that day when he bought it. He said the day he got outside and realized he owned the Christmas Story house, and the second later when he walked inside and realized how terrible it was inside and what a mess it was. But, you know, I'm kind of basing a lot of things on what they've done. So the house itself, I want to open it for like school children and all that stuff. That's on the arm. There's no charge for that if they have come in groups and we figure out a system that, you know.
If they're reading the book or something.
Right. And I'm already getting tons of requests for that, but we got to just figure that out. But then we'll keep it open to the general public. And yeah, it'll be, you know, X amount, you know, $10, half off for military, law enforcement, and seniors and children and whatever. I'm trying to do a gift shop at the back, because there was a property that you see in the 2009 when they restored the scenes, that there was a whole other thing back there. I want to get a store downtown that has all the Outsiders and Essie Hinton related stuff, because I want to preserve the Essie Hinton's legacy. As much as she doesn't need my help doing that, there's nowhere to really get any of that stuff right now. Maybe something at the airport. So we're trying to do other things as well outside that... It's like a invite into Tulsa as well, you know, because a lot of people don't know. When I tell them that it's in Tulsa, they're like, Tulsa, really?
That's something like the city, like for tourism purposes, might get behind.
No, they
the
have
state
already.
Of Oklahoma.
Listen, the mayor's, you come out, the city council's all down with us. Anytime we need to do anything, they're like, done. What else can we help you with?
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, that's the good part of it. Unlike LA, New York, or any big metropolitan city where they're like,
yeah,
you're who and you're what?
Yeah.
Like, get in line, pal.
Right.
They're doing everything they can to make this thing, you know, successful. Mm-hmm. So, again, we want to my strength, really, when I told you I'm not good at, like, you know, restoring homes, but I am really good at doing branding, merchandising,
marketing,
social media. And so I want to be an ambassador of the new Tulsans that are, like, you know, moving to town and trying to, you know, show the rest of the world the wonders of the Magic City, which is Tulsa, Oklahoma.
Mm-hmm.
And so my way of doing that is to try to get a little kiosk at the airport. So when you go through and you go to the outside, why is it? You didn't know that was filmed here? Yeah, there's a museum, and they turn the house a museum, and in downtown we have a flagship store and blah, blah, blah. So we're trying to do it like that. But it is a nonprofit for the house in the sense that it's for the community. And,
right.
You know.
To build it, yeah.
Yeah, and I want it to – this thing's going to last longer than me. You know what I mean? We're not selling it. We're not – building it to flip it or, you know. So I want this thing, you know, I hope to be here a long time, but
yeah,
I want it to be here a lot longer.
The Outsiders Museum, man. That's a great thing, and it's been great talking to you. Now this opens the door for future shows.
Oh, and speaking of future shows, next year, man, you're going to be on my list if you don't make it down.
I'll be there. I want to go.
This is the 50th of the book, and there's a lot of sometimes a confusion online. How come the movie came out in 83 and it's 50 years old? You got to get a calculator, guy. And I'm like, actually, the book is 50. You got to read, you know, Google, guy.
Stay gold, Danny.
You too, man. Cheers.
Pony boy. I asked the nurse to give you this book so you could finish it. It's worth saving those little kids. Their lives are worth more than mine. They have more to live for. Tell Dally I think it's worth it. I'm gonna miss you guys. I've been thinking about it in that poem, that guy that wrote it. He meant you're gold when you're a kid, like green. When you're a kid, everything's new. Dawn. Like the way you dig sunsets, Pony, that's gold. Keep it that way. It's a good way to be. I want you to ask Dally to look at one. I don't think he's ever seen a sunset. There's still lots of good in the world. Tell Dally I don't think he knows. Your buddy, Johnny.
All right, Danny Boy O'Connor has turned the Outsider's House into a museum in Tulsa, Oklahoma. All the info on Facebook, just search The Outsider's House. It's really cool. And like you heard us talking about, I've been there and seen it. That was about a year ago. Danny's done so much work since then, so check it out. You won't be disappointed if you're an Outsiders fan like I do. Let me know who your favorite Outsider is at Talk is Jericho. And next week, we will give some of the names of who you chose. Is it Derry? Is it Dally? Is it Johnny? Is it Steve? Tom Cruise with one or two lines. Is it Soda Pop Curtis? Oh, so many great guys in that movie. Is it Leif Garrett as Bob? Do you like Bob? Listen, great movie. If you haven't seen it, go check it out now. The Outsiders, Francis Ford Coppola's masterpiece, one of my favorite movies of all time. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for checking out the info for Chris Jericho's Rock and Wrestling Rager at Sea. Newest edition, Corey Taylor from Slipknot and Stone Sour will be aboard. And Noelle Foley was just added to our killer lineup. She's going to be doing some hosting. She's hilarious as well. Remember, for as little as $150, you can hold your cab and make your reservation. And once you book, everything is included in the booking price. All the food, all the activities, all the live podcasts, stand-up comedy shows, meet and greets, concerts, and the chance to see Kenny Omega in the ring. That's right.
all covered in the price of your cabin. Only thing you got to pay for, drinks and gambling. Everything else is on us. And you'll be able to hang out on the ship with all these incredible guests. Corey Taylor will be there. Kenny Omega will be there. Jim Ross, Jerry the King Lawler, SoCal Val, Mick Foley, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, Rey Mysterio, Raven, Cyrus and Paul Lazenby from Killing the Town, Conan, Disco Inferno, and Shane Helms from Keeping It 100. Dave and Tim from Beyond the Darkness will be scaring the pants off you with some scary tales. Cole Cabana and Marty DeRosa doing the Unprofessional Wrestling Show. Brad Williams, Ron Funches, Dave LaGreca and Busted Open will be joining the festivities. Corey Taylor playing an acoustic set. Fozzy, Phil Campbell, the Bastard Sons, King, The Stir, straight from Atlanta, Georgia. The Dave Spivak Project, Spiwi, he was boarding with me today. He's going to be doing Get Out of My House and all the hits from the Dave Spivak Project. Very, very cool stuff. The Darlings of Rock and Roll, the Cherry Bumps, Shoot to Thrill, the world's best female AC/DC cover band, Blizzard of Ozzy, the world's best Ozzy Osbourne cover band, and of course, Ring of Honor. Presenting to you the Sea of Honor Tournament aboard the ship. Matches happening in the middle of the ocean, and the winner of the Sea of Honor Tournament gets a Ring of Honor World Heavyweight Championship shot in the future. Young Bucks will be there. The villain, Marty Scurll, Briscoe Brothers, Dalton Castle, Frankie Kazarian, Adam Page, Christopher Daniels, Jay Lethal, the American Nightmare, Cody, don't call him Rhodes, Cody's wife, Brandy, and like I said, Kenny Omega also joining the incredible lineup of talent. We've got so many more. There's another 12 announcements to come. This is off the charts. If you haven't gone to ChrisJerichoCruise.com and booked your cabin now, what the hell are you waiting for? We are going to be rocking. It's going to be the vacation of a lifetime, October 27th, leaving Miami. Thank you so much. Go check out ChrisJerichoCruise.com. Thank you so much, and we will see you on Wednesday. When speaking of big names, who do we got on Wednesday? Who do you think it is? You want to take a guess? I'm going to tell you who it is. It's a classic album clash. People went nuts for it when we did Master of Puppets versus Ride the Lightning. This time, it's Nirvana. It's going to be In Utero versus Nevermind, featuring Big Cass. You wonder what Big Cass has been doing? We're going to talk about it. Plus, we're going to debate which is the better Nirvana record, In Utero or Nevermind, right before WrestleMania. Big Cass is ready to come back very soon, but he's going to be talking about Nirvana on the Classic Album Clash Part 2 this Wednesday. Yeah, so we'll see you then. In the meantime, in the between time, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy. And remember, do it for Johnny, man. Do it for Johnny.
Golly, that was sure pretty, huh?
Yeah.
It's like the mist is what's pretty, you know? All gold and silver.
Mm-hmm.
Too bad it can't stay like that all the time.
Nothing gold can stay.
Huh?
Nature's first green is gold. Her hardest hue to hold. Her early leaves a flower. But only so an hour. Then leaf subsides to leaf, so Eden sank to grief. So dawn goes down today. Nothing gold can stay.